The Angry Chicken is a production of Amove TV. Bookmark amove.tv for more gaming and esports shows. The Angry Chicken is directly supported by listeners like you via patreon.com/TAC.
A podcast about Hearthstone, Heroes of Warcraft. This is the Angry Chicken.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Angry Chicken. Garrett is not here this week, so you've just got me, Jocelyn, and I am joined by the wonderful Justin. Justin, thank you so much for being here with us again, 2 weeks in a row.
The only unbroken thread. The Angry Chicken is me, Justin Robert Young. Thank you very, very much for having me, Joss. It is always a pleasure.
Yeah, this should not be Saviors of Uldum. This should be Saviors of the Angry Chicken, starring Jury.
You know, I do my best. Whenever I'm called, I dutifully show up.
Yeah, so Garrett is actually away. He's on vacation. He filled in for me last week. Jury, you did too. I got to catch a little bit of the show, and you guys did such a great job. And I can't wait to talk about all the new cards because, oh my God, we got almost 30 new cards since the last Angry Chicken.
Through these because, yeah, there is a lot there, and I think a lot to be excited about.
Yeah, I can't believe just the kind of overall kookiness and power level of the cards coming out of Uldum. I think it might be a little early to say, but I think it might be actually rivaling Frozen Throne. It feels like these kind of middle of the year expansions, man.
Whew. Well, you know, and as like a kind of a top level thing, it sort of feels like where they've wanted to get to. They wanted to get to a point where they had balanced things out and they'd taken out enough things that would limit them in the design space. And this feels like, for the first time since the kind of leadership change, that we're seeing like, all right, no, this is the direction we want to go, and this is why we need to make all these changes and sand down all these other edges.
Yeah, it definitely feels like they're sticking a little bit closer. I mean, we've talked in the past weeks about class identity and all the rest of it. They're sticking a little bit closer to it. I mean, sometimes that feels good, sometimes maybe not as much, but they're sticking to it a little bit better. We can kind of see a clear direction coming out of the Hearthstone team, and you're right, this feels like what they've been aiming for, given, you know, the change now that we're seeing. And plus, I always love the later on in the year we get with the later on expansions, you get to see some of those higher power levels because they're not going to stick around in competitive and standard as long as the first expansion. Yeah. So it kind of like ramps up, and we're starting to see a little bit of that crazy ramp. So before we get too far into actual card talk, wanted to take a second here and thank our patrons over at patreon.com/TAC. Thank you guys so much for the show. If you do like what we do and you want to support us, that is the best way to do so. You also get access to our super fancy patron Discord, where you can submit your crazy game stories, your emails, you can talk directly to Garrett and I. It's super fun over there, so you guys should go and check it out. Quick thank you to our new patrons this week. Thank you so much to Andrew C. and Goldie, no last name given. We very much appreciate the support, you guys. Again, that's patreon.com/tax. So with no further ado, let's get into a real quick news story before we start talking some new cards.
Good news, everyone!
We have pre-release events coming back. So this is news, but like pretty expected news, I think. So the Saviors of Uldum pre-release is going to run from 10 a.m. Pacific on August 2nd until 10 a.m. Pacific on August 5th. So, Jury, have you ever done any of these pre-release events?
No. Quite frankly, I have not. No, normally. Okay. Normally, I just kind of buy my cards and then I just wait. And then I'll watch.
That's the key, is the waiting and the patience. If you don't want to wait and you don't have any patience, then anyone can now host one of these pre-release events. So when they originally started, they were like official fireside gathering things. But now you can do private pre-release events, then you get to open all your card packs, Jerry. Why are you not doing this?
Because, like, to be totally honest with you, if I opened all my card packs before I paid attention to the internet to tell me what cards were good and what I should dust, like, I would at best not know what to do, and at worst think I knew what to do and would dust cards that I would then be annoyed that I had dusted. So I need the wisdom of the crowds. I am not a Hearthstone savant enough, nor do I trust my own instinct to not at least have the Angry Chicken pack opening stream. I at least need that so everybody can talk about stuff, and maybe it's like a ritual that I just like to see you guys whinge on getting who's getting the most golds. Like that just makes me your suffering makes me happy. Not well, yours, because you usually win.
I usually don't suffer, else. So
your collective suffering, Garrett's suffering.
Garrett's suffering. Yes, we can all relish in Garrett's suffering. I can get behind that. But yeah, that's the reason I don't do the pre-release events. Actually, is because we do the card opening stream. So I can't really do this because if all my packs are open, then there's nothing to do. I guess I could just buy more. That's how they get you.
No, you just record yourself doing it and then just play the video. So like everyone just thinks that like you're actually doing it then, and just like periodically say like, oh yeah, it sucks. You haven't got any golds yet, Garrett. Like just say it because you know it's going to
totally
happen.
Just don't even have him in the call. Yeah. Just oh man, only one legendary in 50 packs. Oh, poor you, Garrett.
Oh man. Yeah. You should really write an email.
Oh, that's a great plan. Okay, I'm totally doing that now. So the other thing that you could do at the pre-release events, other than open your cards, is you can also play in one of two brawls. So you can basically play in a no-rules brawl, which lets you play with all the new cards that you opened. And as far as I know, you don't even have like the restrictions, like only one copy of the legendary and, you know, only two copies of the rest of your cards. Like, you just, there's no rules. Put in whatever you want. Go have fun. Which I wish that they would just make a brawl. Like, let's just have that.
Yeah, you know, I think it's great for that moment though, because it seems like something that would be very exciting in the beginning and then would kind of get annoying and broken really fast. And
but that's the point of brawls, to be annoying and broken.
Yeah, I mean, but some brawls are more, have even like in that week lifespan that they have to live, some kind of get a few more days out of it than others. Like, remember that that like one card brawl or two card brawl?
Unstable portal brawl, because that was the best brawl ever.
I mean, yeah, it was one of those things where it's like, all right, you had like two decks immediately became clear on what you were going to do.
Oh, I see what you mean. Where you built a deck that only had the two cards
had
in
two
it.
Cards,
oh, okay, yeah.
Or three cards. And it was like, okay, like, because ultimately it's like a ton of restrictions or no restrictions ultimately wind up becoming kind of the same thing in a weird way, right?
Yep, that makes sense. And yeah, now that I remember, I feel like we haven't had that brawl in a really long time. Although I'll admit I haven't paid
because
very much attention to
like
the brawl.
12 hours of fun. Like, it was like really fun for 12 hours.
It got figured out really fast.
Yeah.
It might be interesting to see now, though, with it, like with a bigger card pool, what could actually be done if there would be, you know, more than one broken combo.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be. But again, it's like I would rather. Like, I think this is a great use for it because you're going to have a couple hours and everyone's going to be scrambling and everyone's going to be sharing and everyone's going to like be like, oh, cool. What do we do here?
Yeah.
Like, that's a fun team building activity in a way that if it were game wide, it would just be kind of like, oh, it's kind of a really unfun science experiment.
Yeah. Fair enough. The other thing that you get to do the second brawl at these pre-release events is that you get to play with the new deck recipe. So these are the ones that are going to filter in Whizbang. And I'm excited to see what they have for us, because, I mean, we still haven't seen all the cards yet, right? So I'm assuming that maybe it'll be a quest deck, but because that's like the one strand that ties all of the classes together in this expansion, right? Is that all the classes are going to get a quest. So I would assume all of the deck recipes are going to be quest decks, but maybe I'm totally wrong. Maybe there's some new crazy going on.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think it's very exciting. I hope everybody who goes to these events at reply me on Twitter and tell me how much fun you're having.
Yep, absolutely. So if you guys want more information, there is a blog post up on the Play Hearthstone website. Without further ado, let's jump into the new cards. Unfortunately, I don't have Garrett's fun bumper, so we're just going to play the Strat one, but I'll make it worthwhile, I promise.
Hit it very hard.
Wanna post something up?
Yeah, man.
Time to pay.
The deathiest death. I did it, right? I was really close.
You nailed it. Nailed it.
So first up here, we're going to start talking about some druid cards, and I totally don't have a... There we go. Button there for this. So we're going to start off talking about the newly revealed druid cards. But I think before we get too deep into each individual class, we kind of have to talk about the League of Explorers, because part of the release of this last week was we got to see all four of the like newly reimagined League of Explorers cards. So we got Elise, we got Reno, we got Sir Finley, and we got Bran. And all of them have the same sort of battle cry effect to them. In that I don't think we can call them Reno decks anymore. I think we have to stick to like Highlander decks or Singleton decks or whatever your preferred terminology is, because every single one of the explorers this time around has the condition that your deck has to have no duplicates, and then they do something cool. So I'm excited that Reno type effects, or I guess Highlander effects, are going to be in the game again. But what about you, Jury? Are you looking at this thinking, yay, Reno type effects?
Well, I think it's very interesting, and it's kind of curious that we just had the conversations about the differences between like having a ton of limitations versus having no limitations, because I think the difference between these, I'm calling them Reno, sorry.
Yeah, it's fine.
the difference between like the Reno and let's say Gen and Baku is that because Gen and Baku made you do something that theoretically would be more damaging to your deck building, they had to make the power of that much more to compensate, right? That was the bargain they were making with the player for that card. Now, what they found out was that it turns out that damage that you didn't really damage your deck all that much.
No.
And you got an amazing thing out of it. So,
right from the start of the game, too.
Yeah, right from the jump. So if you look at Reno and it's like, okay, well, that's not that big of a problem to just not have not have the certainty of seeing certain cards, or at least more of a certainty to see of certain cards by having duplicates in them. It is an inconvenience, but not a major, major inconvenience. So it's like, I like what they have settled here is like, all right, mild inconvenience for a cool effect, as opposed to totally theoretically like cripple your deck for an amazing thing. Which obviously was so bad they had to like rip it out of the game.
Well, and I think that Reno, the original version of Reno, was pretty good power-wise because the card pool was so much smaller. At this point in time, especially if you're looking at Wild, a lot of these cards, these four Explorer cards, very much feel like you could just slot them in a one-of deck over in Wild, because Wild is so powerful. Wild has so many options. Like you probably, it's barely an inconvenience. And in fact, there's a lot of decks, particularly the Reno Mage decks, because of the existence of Kazakus, that you could just put Reno, the second version of Reno, in, and it's like you're not even changing your deck at all, hardly. So I think particularly in Wild, I think these are going to be a lot stronger. But I think that the original versions of these cards had to have much more powerful effects because of the size of the card pool. Like these cards, these versions, the new ones we're getting in Saviors of Uldum, feel to me on the like balanced, possibly even underpowered side. And I think that's okay, because we don't want another Genbaku situation.
Yeah, I think, look, what you want to reward in power swings are deck construction and play, and like disciplined play, right? So,
ooh, I like that. Disciplined play. I like that.
Disciplined play from the mobile gamer. I mean, and that was the problem with Ganabanku, was that like it didn't matter what game you played. As long as you hit a deck recipe and you had a bunch of you passed this fairly low threshold, now all of a sudden you had this gigantic power bump before you even made a move. Mm-hmm. With this Elise, for example, It's like, this could be really powerful if you play right.
Yeah.
And you build your deck right.
Yeah, exactly. And I think so the other piece that applies to all four of these cards, because I don't want to repeat ourselves four times, is the fact that Bomb Warrior exists right now. And so as soon as a Bomb Warrior is able to shuffle more than one bomb into your deck, it's going to turn off these effects, which really sucks, but makes me think that we're going to get some sort of Bomb Warrior or like bomb targeting card, like remove all copies of bombs in your deck, or, you know, or remove two copies, something. I don't know what the balance is going to look like, but I feel like they have to.
Oh, that would be a really cool, like reverse shield slam. If somebody loads your deck up with bombs and you can just throw them all right back in their face.
Sure.
We should also read the text on these cards, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're gonna get to each one of them individually. I just wanted to kind of get the general explore Reno type no duplicates conversation out of the way, because there's a lot of points that just apply to all of them.
100%. Yeah.
And so yeah, the Bomb Warrior thing is one of them. And since the Bomb Warrior is so powerful and so common right now, it would really suck if we don't get a way to address that, because then I don't think any of these Highlander decks are going to see any kind of play, right? Because then they're shut off by one of the most powerful and popular decks in the meta. So why would you even try to make this work on ladder? Yeah. So
yeah, you would need some kind of tech to get those bombs.
Yeah.
If for whatever reason, like bombs didn't count or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. So apparently right now, a chat room saying Ixar, I was on Omni Slash last week and made it seem like there's no bomb tech coming, but they are going to keep an eye on it. So at least they're aware, because I would hate for, like, this is kind of the problem with them drawing this imaginary line between heroes and villains for the duration of Year of the Dragon, is that that means four classes are always going to be the hero classes, and or the good guys, bad guys, whatever you want to, however you want to call them. But that means that they're kind of like stuck for the year. And if their big thing in this expansion is Highlander decks, and that's totally shut off and unplayable, it's like you've got the same four classes that are always going to have these kind of like handicaps if their mechanic doesn't work for an expansion. So I don't know. I hope they address it, because to me, it's a huge problem, I think.
It is. And it would be a bigger problem if we see even more bomb decks, right? Like, or we just see none of these being played, that it's like, okay, well then really where are we?
Yeah.
Like, why did we come all this way?
Yep, exactly. And I think even just the again, suggestion in the chat room of changing the wording here to, if your deck starts with no duplicates, then duplicate your hand, because, or do whatever the effect is. I think that could be a nice way to kind of bridge that gap. But at the same time, it is kind of nice to have the ability to disrupt your opponent if they are playing a Highlander deck to kind of turn those things off. So I do feel like it's like a bomb specific problem.
And I guess that is, I'm glad it's on their radar.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, especially in at this phase in watching everything develop, we can kind of paint ourselves into a corner into thinking about problems that we might believe will ultimately be bigger than they are when play starts, but I'll be curious to see exactly how much, because like let's say you get Elise on curve, right? Like then it's up to your opponent to figure that out and put two bombs in your deck before turn five, which is like not a given,
right? It's pretty easy though. But anyways,
I mean, look, it is likely, especially if these decks start seeing a lot of play,
it would be
something that you would see a lot of. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's all of our Explorer talk. Everything we just said applies to all four of the Explorers we're going to talk about right now. But first, we're going to talk about Elise the Enlightened, who is a 5-mana 5/5 legendary druid minion that says battle cry, if your deck has no duplicates, then duplicate your hand. And I, for one, freaking love this card. I think it's going to be so cool, especially played alongside the quest, like the new quest, the untapped potential quest, right? So I think that there's, this and the Hidden Oasis alongside the quest, I think just be so cool.
I think this is, again, it's like if you play it the right way, you're going to have that is a significant power bump.
Well, and the thing is, too, it shores up one of the difficulties that these Reno decks have had in the past, which is that, like you were saying, Justin, you have to be very disciplined in your play because you only have one version of a card. So Elise says, meh, you had one version before. Let's have two now. That's more fun.
Two.
Yeah.
Why not both?
Exactly. And the other great thing about her is, so she's a 5-mana minion tied to a 5/5 body that could give you up to 5 cards. Is this starting to sound familiar, everyone? But she's only 5 mana. So unlike Ultimate Infestation, if you were to draw 5 cards, then, you know, you didn't have anything else to do. You had to have an Innervate or a coin or something to try to free up that hand space. She can be the 6th card in your hand, and you can just fill up your hand and still potentially have more mana to play. You can play her down earlier than you would Ultimate Infestation. Like, depending on how, like, stringent the build around thing is, so the no duplicates deck, which I think Druid can probably get away with the no duplicates build. I think she's going to see some play, and I think she's more powerful than people are giving her credit for.
Well, yeah, and I think this is one of those cards that if you can understand and appreciate the utility, then it only gets more powerful the cooler the deck that you can build around it. And that's something that is still coming into focus. But I certainly see a world where this gets, it does get a lot of play.
Yeah. And I also mentioned the Hidden Oasis, which is the 6-mana Druid spell. Rare Druid spell that says choose one, summon a 6/6 ancient with taunt, or restore 12 health, which on its own, it's pretty okay. It's decent. It's balanced. You know, those are both ways to kind of slow down the game or stabilize. Yeah. But with the quest reward, having your, which you can basically, there's some really cool plays to be able to get the quest reward and play Hidden Oasis on turn to then, again, stabilize, heal up, and get your 6/6 with taunt with this new Druid quest. So I think that this Hidden Oasis, I think there's going to be some sort of, like, Oasis Druid, Untapped Druid. I don't want to call it Quest Druid because we've already got all the quests over in Wild. So I feel like we're going to have to settle on some different nomenclature for these. But, I think Untapped Druid could be really cool.
I can already feel myself being forced to order another drink because I'm playing Hearthstone at the bar and this game will not end.
Exactly. So you've got a druid that even against aggro has potentially taken more than 12 damage. Like, you get the druid down to, like, what, 10 to 15 health? You're like, all right, I'm totally going to win. And then they're like, bam, you have to kill a 6/6 with taunt. And also I'm back up over 20 health. And you're just like,
ugh. What's going on?
Yeah, my poor Murlocs.
I know.
So I think this is another one. The more choose one effects that we see, the better the quest is going to get. Druid already has a lot of powerful choose ones, so this is just adding to a pool of cards that I feel like is already pretty good. So I like the tools that Druid seems to be getting in this expansion because they seem to be a little bit less, like, token focused and a little bit more, let's try something new focused, because I feel like Token Druid has been the go-to for quite a long time now.
Yeah. And this is, you know, look, it's both these cards are going to be extraordinarily helpful in a control deck that will take its time to murder you.
Exactly. So next up, we've got Mage. And this is our second explorer here. It's the return of Reno. We have Reno the Relicologist, which took me a little while to kind of wrap my head around how to say that. But he's a 6-mana 4/6, so staying kind of true to old school Reno. He's a legendary mage minion whose battle cry reads, if your deck has no duplicates, deal 10 damage randomly split among all enemy minions. So you're basically looking at probably a board clear over in Wild. The problem I see in Standard right now is that you're playing against either decks that don't really have a big board or that are like Conjurer Mage that, like, see your 10 damage and laugh in your face. Yeah. So I feel like Reno might be one of the, I think, two weakest of the explorers that were announced. Because I don't see him really having a place in Standard. But like I said, I think that he could get slotted into a Highlander mage deck over in Wild, because there, that's already a deck that's seeing a lot of play with the original Reno. They've got access to Ice Block. Like, they've got a lot of tools on the Wild side. So I think you just find a spot for this Reno, because it just gives you one more potential board clear.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously, if you've already built a deck that is utilizing the original Reno, you're already building of that archetype. Why not? Like it is, if you are already getting something out of that concept, then this is yet another cool thing you can get out of it. But I agree with you that I don't know if this is something that is powerful enough to fashion an entire deck around. Unless there's some kind of like multiplier or something like that that we have yet to see, like where this becomes something where you could like legitimately look at, like, you know, that this could be a kill card or something like that, then I don't know exactly how much it slots in.
Yeah, if you could, like, I don't give him poisonous in some way or something, that would be super cool too, because then just boom, board is dead.
yeah if you could do that. I mean, I think it's like, you know, the closer you could get it to being like a low key pyroblast, like that's the most interesting version of it to me. If there was some card that would be like all damage goes face, then.
Oh, I see. So you just want to be like super, super aggro with him.
I mean, I think, well, that's the most interesting thing to me, like in terms of. You know, spreading, you know, just having 10 damage come off a six mana card.
And leaving a body behind too, because that's the other piece, right? You know, is it's not just straight up deal 10 damage to the board. It's deal 10 damage split amongst enemy minions and leave a body behind. But the only thing, I really don't think that in standard right now, the meta that we're looking at and with just the tools available to mage, I don't know if I could build a powerful one of deck right now. This might be more of a wait and see, not in this expansion, but next expansion. Like once we're at our kind of maximum card pool, then maybe we can, then Reno, we'll talk after.
Can we get into the only thing that matters with this card?
Absolutely.
What's going on with this hat? Have you seen all the conspiracy theories about the hat?
Honestly, I don't even understand what all is going on with the hat. Like, his hat is getting blown off because his gun is so powerful, you guys. Like, what? It's not a building. It's just a hat.
Okay, so number one, for those of you who are unaware, there apparently was, and I saw this on Reddit, so I don't know if it popped up on a stream or something before this, but they had an entire lore of Reno's hat. That Reno, I guess, started wearing a hat and then was like losing a hat in another card and now appears without a hat. And then there was the truthers, the hat truthers, who were like, no, it's the hat's definitely behind him because you could see it. And then there were the anti-truthers who were like, no, that's part of the building behind him. So you are very much in, you are a hatter.
Yes.
You believe that this hat is being blown off his head.
Yes, exactly. I mean, look how big that gun is. That's huge. It's just going to go. Poof. Of course, I mean, it's going to explode with power.
It's not a very well-defined hat silhouette. Like, at the very least, they get just kind of an accent behind him.
You can see the head hole. I don't. Is that what you call it? You can see the shadow of the head hole.
You can see a head hole shadow in the background. I don't know. I'm unconvinced. Listen, Joss, I'm just asking questions here. Where did the hat go?
Oh, man. I am glad you were bringing Reddit conspiracies onto the Angry Chicken. This
I'm just
amazing.
Saying. It's the only, it's literally the most interesting thing about this card.
Well, Tortolan Pilgrim, which is another card that's been revealed. It's an 8-mana, 5/5 epic mage minion that with the battle cry, discover a copy of a spell in your deck and cast it with random targets. I feel like is the sort of card that might help enable some sort of control explorer Highlander mage in standard potentially, because like we talked about with Elise, it does have the idea of giving you a second copy of something, which is powerful in a singleton deck. And then on top of that, you've got a lot of mage spells. I almost forgot my point, but I brought it back. You have a lot of mage spells that don't actually have like targeting mechanics. So you could put this in a deck with secrets. You could put this in a deck with things like flame strikes and blizzards and frost novas and all that kind of stuff that you always know what's going to happen. Plus, it's a discover effect from your deck. So this battle cry effect is 100% within your control as a deck builder.
Yeah.
So I think that the Reno and the Tortolan Pilgrim together could potentially do some control magey type things. But again, I don't know if that can happen in this meta.
That's exactly my question. My question is, do you have the tools to stay alive without spells to the point where you can fairly reliably survive to turn 8 and then bring out something that's going to affect the board in the way that you want, or buff your health in a way that you want? This is a really rad control mage card. I just don't know if it has the ingredients needed to kind of sing the way it could.
Which, again, I think this might be more of a wild discussion than a standard discussion just for that reason. Because, I mean, I feel like this goes in every mage deck over in wild if you're thinking about doing anything late game. It's just so powerful.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh,
big totally. big spell mage? Yes, please.
You're in. Yeah, it's over.
So, yeah, I'm super excited about this card. And more Tortolans, please, because I think they're awesome. So I just want more turtles in my Hearthstone. We also have two more cards that interact with secrets that have been revealed, which makes me think that we're probably going to get a secret in this expansion. But the first one is Arcane Flak Mage, which is a 2-mana 3/2 rare mage minion that reads, after you play a secret, not a battle cry, just a persistent effect, after you play a secret, deal 2 damage to all enemy minions. And then we also have the Cloud Prince, which is a 5-mana 4/4 common mage minion. It says battle cry, if you control a secret, deal 6 damage. Not to a minion, can go face. Basically, if you control a secret, cast a fireball.
Yeah, that, you know, and again, it kind of gets us to this idea of Tortolan Pilgrim, right? That it's like, okay, these are really, really cool if you are, and I guess theoretically, if it's Discover, you could have two kind of like, up to two not great late game spells in your deck and still reliably get one of your really good late game spells.
Sure.
But these are the kind of cards that would allow you to stay alive until late into the game, because they are great against the board.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I feel like you are the like tempo secret mage expert when it comes to people that we get on the show. So yes. Tempo, like Secret Mage, has kind of been in the tier 3-ish kind of area. Do you think
these are dark days? Dark days for my favorite archetype. Yeah. Yes.
Do you think that these two, plus possibly one more new secret, is this enough to bring it back up to a position of power, or are people just going to be making giants?
If the secret is something that can also clear the board and you are looking at something that or can do damage, I mean, I think that you are looking. I don't know if a defensive secret, you know, i.e. something that triggers upon an attack, really does a lot. But if it's an offensive secret, something that really can put a hurtin' on your opponent's board state or put damage on their hero, then yeah, I think that this is something cool. If you are looking at this as a way to kind of impose your will, because they can, like, you can look at it of one of two ways. Either it is kind of, these are great tempo cards, or they are great, just keep me alive because I'm trying to do something cool at the end.
Right. So, I mean, if you had something along the lines of explosive runes, then you could be, you know, impacting their side, maybe doing some throughput damage, not to mention, you know, you play Arcane Flak Mage and then you play explosive runes, you've softened up their existing board and then also are guarding against whatever the next thing is that they play. And like I say, with this Flak Mage, first of all, it's rare, so you can have two copies of it. It basically has a built-in consecration other than the fact it doesn't go face, it just is to enemy minions. But like, I feel like there's something there. I feel like these are really good cards, these the ones that interact with secrets here. So I don't know. I feel like there could be something here. I like this. I want to see more Secret Mage, because the other thing about Mage Secrets, right, is they're the most expensive ones out of all the secrets in the game. It also means they're the most powerful ones. So I always feel like if anyone's going to make some sort of awesome secret deck work, Mage is just the one.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, because has any other class had secrets stripped out of its classic set, right? Like there's a reason why.
Yeah, I think the only other time we've seen like things get changed was Snipe was taken out of Arena for Hunter, right? But it was still available to be played in Standard. I think Mage is the only one that's had actual things taken out of their kit. Paladin and Hunter, yeah, everything's still the same. So
they were too dope.
Yeah.
Handle the dopeness.
Exactly. So I'm counting on you to make a Secret Mage day one.
I'm all for it. Like you said, it is my favorite archetype. I love playing it. And I hope it returns to prominence, because I miss it. I've been cheating on it with Mech Hunter.
Well, speaking of Hunter, this is our third explorer now. We've got Dino Tamer Bran, who is a 7-mana 2/4. Stay with me here. Legendary Hunter minion. With the condition, if your deck has no duplicates, then you get to summon King Crush, which means you're going to have yourself a charging dino alongside this 2/4 body. So 10-12 of stats, not terrible for 7-mana. But again, this build around condition and the fact, I mean, I feel like Bran is the weakest of all of them. Because the build around condition in Hunter, it's just there's so many other cool things that Hunter is doing right now. You've got Death Rattle stuff, you got mech stuff, you got beast stuff with Dire Frenzy. Like, why would you ever try to make Bran work?
Is this aggro Hunter? Is this Smork Hunter?
Is this your finisher? You think there's enough cards for an aggressive Hunter to make its way to turn seven, at which point they finish you off for the last I mean
because it is cheating out King Crush, right?
It is, yeah, it is. And King Crush does have charge, which, you know, so many minions now, like, I don't even remember the last time they made a charge minion, because they're so potentially problematic. It basically got placed with Rush, right? So
yeah,
he's one of the few that still has the ability to come down on the same turn as he also hits you in the face. So,
I mean, and yeah, and it also means that you can have another King Crush.
Right? Yeah, that's true. That is true. But then you'd still have to like play it, which is
you'd
gross.
Have to play, yeah. You have to pay
no one
price.
Likes to play King Crush.
Everyone
just likes to
cheat
get
King
him.
Crush.
Yeah.
King Crush is such a diva.
You yeah. Have
to pay too much for King Crush. I agree. I mean, like, initially my I look at that card and I'm like, ooh, like cheating out. Like, I mean, could you make it work? But ultimately I do kind of agree with you and the chat here that seven is probably too slow in any kind of aggro deck. Although, like, a cheaper King Crush is never a bad thing, right? Like, it just is that your most damaging thing? Like, can that be the reason why you built this deck? And I don't think it.
Yeah, exactly. And the other problem that Hunter has, and going back to the idea of class identity, is, you know, card draw and generation and stuff, right? And so you can't even necessarily target him to make sure that you end up being able to play Bran on 7, because even though King Crush is a huge payoff and it would be super great to get him out for 7-mana and close out a game, you have no way to target that Bran. Like, he's not a beast himself. He's not a death rattle. So you can't use I'm totally blanking on, but like the half mech, half beast bear guy that brings you or draws you a death rattle card when he dies. Yeah. So you can't use him. You can't use Master's Call. Like, there's no way to ensure that you're actually going to get him on 7. So I don't know if he's reliable enough to be an aggro finisher, because again, yeah, 7 seems really, really slow. And are there enough powerful one ofs to get you to the place where 8 damage to face would be enough? Like, do you think Hunter has enough tools?
I'm not. I mean, to be totally honest with you and the audience here, I am not up enough on everything that is in Hunter to know an answer to that question. But I do know that that's what I would probably look for. And if I'm going to assume where this works, it would be some way. I mean, maybe, you know, in a world where we get some like a cheat out the League of Explorers card or something like that, you know, a Call of the Explorers. And you get the thing that you were waiting for earlier, then it's like, all right, yeah. Because if you can cheat King Crush out for cheaper than seven, then it's like, then it's on.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I mean, I do understand that tracking also exists, but I mean, you're talking about, you know, one shot, two shots. Actually, no, one shot, because you have to have no duplicates, right? So you get literally one shot with tracking to find your brand. So it's not nearly as, like you said, as reliable as if it was like draw the explorer from your deck or, you know, like insert name of card here. It's it's not reliable. And so I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm on the fence, but I don't see
if there is a world where you can discount stuff in your hand, this becomes more of a thing.
So Thorazon over in Wild.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is like right now we're in this. I feel like this has kind of become the trope both like last week and this week where it's like we don't know, but we know enough to know that things will be interesting and wild. Right.
Yeah.
So well, it's like the new I have no idea what this card is going to do in standard is, man, what a card in Wild.
And that's kind of the thing with this set is because they're going kind of back and taking a look at Hearthstone's history, pulling in a whole bunch of old style mechanics and stuff. And they did this in Rise of Shadows as well. Seems to be the theme going forward through Year of the Dragon is kind of a look back at Hearthstone and bringing things back, like quests are another thing that they brought back. And it makes Wild so much more interesting because it's like, oh, now there's stuff that's playing into all of these cards and all these things I'm trying to do in Wild. It feels like they're creating a cool world for Standard while keeping Wild in mind and giving them tools and things to do. And you're right. I totally feel like I so many times in this expansion, more than ever before, I'm looking at this and going, ooh, I can see how that'd be fun and wild. Yeah. And it's getting me stoked for Wild, which normally I'm not. Wild is not my jam.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, wild seems like I'm going to stay here in the shallow end.
In the shallow end, yeah, with my little floaties.
I don't listen, man.
The safety of Standard.
Although, like, I mean, I've been playing this game forever, you know, like I have the cards, but I just, I don't know. It scares me. It frightens and confuses me.
I'm just looking at cards and screaming,
I thought you were dead.
We have another Hunter card that's been revealed. This one is called Hunter's Pack. So this is a 3-mana common Hunter spell that adds a random hunter, beast, secret, and weapon to your hand. And this is one that I think actually, I'm sure it would be fine in Wild, but this one screams Standard for me because if you look at the weapon, secrets, and beasts available to hunters in Standard, it's a pretty strong list. I mean, there aren't that many right now. So the ones there are, there's some good early game ones. There's some good late game ones. You've got Tundra Rhinos and High Mains and King Crush for the late game stuff. You've got, you know, Scavenging Hyena and Timberwolves and Springpaws and Shimmerflies for your early game. Like, there's a lot of really good beasts that you can get. There's, like, maybe Starving Buzzard is kind of the one that I would not necessarily. It's, like, the low end of what I would want to pull from this card.
Yeah.
But everything else seems like it's just going to shore up your tempo value game. Secrets wise, you've got Explosive, Freezing, Misdirection, Snake Trap, Snipe, and Rat Trap. Like, again, all solid options.
They're all worthwhile.
Yeah.
Like, either, like, at worst, one of them you can't play, right? Most likely, you're going to at least get something that's worthwhile. And at best, you are playing into the synergy that you have built this deck for. So,
yeah. So yeah, I think, and again, with the idea of hunters having not a whole lot of actual card draw, card generation in general in hunters is going to be good as long as the pool is good. I think the pool is great. So the more hunter stuff we can actually generate, the better. We also got two extremely strong hunter beasts announced this past week, we got Scarlet Webweaver, which is a 6-mana 5/5 epic hunter minion with the battle cry, reduce the cost of a random beast in your hand by 5.
Yipes.
And then we got the Wild Bloodstinger, which is a 6-mana 6/9 epic hunter minion with the battle cry, summon a minion from your opponent's hand and attack it. So we've got some super awesome value tempo stuff that you can get with Scarlet Webweaver. Like if you're hitting it, you could get a 0-mana Tundra Rhino.
Yeah.
What?
I mean,
and it has a 5/5 body. This isn't even asking a whole lot of me. It's like, do you have some beasts? Do you want a 5/5 beast? Here you go. Like, oh man, this seems like, this seems so good.
No, that is a tempo swinger, right? like this makes Beast Hunter really, really powerful. I think that you are this is value on value on value, especially with the 5/5 body. But also a Wild Bloodstinger, I think, is a really good card. I mean, a 6/9 body is pretty beefy for 6-mana, and you can totally disrupt somebody's game. Like you can just like totally throw stuff off for your opponent, which I'm always a gigantic fan of.
I love these because it's totally a callback to Dirty Rat. Now, Dirty Rat was a little bit better in that it was cheaper, so it had a little bit more flexibility. This is going to be a mid to late game type card. But at the same time, you probably also want to hold on to this for a lot longer, because if you're looking to disrupt combos and you're looking to pull some of those things out of your opponent's hand, then you probably don't necessarily want to do that right off the top. And it's not even bad if it hits something small, because say even you pull a 1/1 out of your opponent's hand that doesn't really do anything, or like a loot hoarder, let's say, then you attack it and you're left with a 6/7. Okay, darn, that went poorly.
Except it
did.
6/7 on curve.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Yeah. You are great.
So I think if it hits something big, it's going to kill almost everything. Like obviously the elephant in this room is going to be the giants in the Conjurer Mage, but at the same time, like 6 attack, if this couldn't have any more attack, like this is plenty of attack on this Bloodstinger. I think it's balanced. I think it's really, really good.
Yeah, and even then, like even if you pull a giant, like playing a giant before they're ready and you now leave it vulnerable to other stuff on the board, like you could do worse.
Yeah, it's vulnerable to other stuff on the board. It's only going to have 2 health left. Like, they're basically, instead of, I mean, they can probably hit your face, but what if you got an explosive trap up from your awesome secret that you got from Hunter's Pack? Like,
yeah.
I think, And you'll still have a 6/1 left on board that they have to deal with somehow, right? So even if you're hitting something with that has high attack itself.
Yeah.
It's still like likely going to survive.
Yeah, because you hit an 8/8 giant, which I think is probably why that's a 9 health minion.
Right.
even if you do that, then all right. If you're playing, giant mage, then they're gonna ping you, but that's 2 mana that they can't screw around with, and you probably botched a combo of theirs.
Yep. So I think the Wild Bloodstinger is a great card, and I love these kind of anything that just will disrupt my opponent. Like we talked about counterplay with the Reno decks, being able to shuffle stuff in, bombs aside, is really cool. And this is something that goes into, again, like one of those kind of tech card decks, possibly. Although I think you just kind of put this in your deck. If you're playing anything with Master's Call, Dire Frenzy, like anything beast centric in a hunter, I think you just 2 of this. Like, I don't even think you think about it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think both these cards are awesome.
Yeah.
And I think that everybody should use them in the game of Hearthstone.
All right. Next up, we've got Paladin. And this is our 4th and final Explorer. So this is our last good guy class. And we've got Sir Finley of the Sands, staying fairly true to his original design. He's a 2-mana 2/3 legendary paladin minion that if your deck has no duplicates, you get to discover an upgraded hero power. So previous iteration of Sir Finley was a 1-mana 1/3 that let you discover a hero power, period. So this has a deck condition, but gives you a more powerful payoff.
Yeah. And then what is the hero power here?
So the upgraded hero powers are all of the Justicar hero powers. So it's all the Genin Baku hero powers that you were getting. Okay. So basically just, you know, 3 damage if you're the hunter, 2 damage if you're the mage, 4 health, 4 armor if you're priest or if you're warrior. You can get Life Tap, which is something that people often tried to get off of Sir Finley. Like Life Tap was one of the great ones, except you don't actually take any damage anymore. That's the upgraded Warlock one. It's just 2 mana, draw a card, period. Yeah. The only one that really, really super duper sucks is the Shaman one. That's the dud, right? Sure, you could just summon a totem of your choice.
Get those totems out of here.
Yeah. So you're discovering it, right?
So you will never have to get stuck with the Shaman.
Exactly. And I think Priest is interesting because at least Priest is it's the 4 health heal, right? So that, and it can go on your minions, on your face, all kinds of stuff. So it's not the greatest, because I think that this Sir Finley is probably going to be best in something that's a little bit more aggressive. But the great thing about Sir Finley is that he's just kind of super flexible. Like, you can play him early in an aggro deck and look for that major hunter hero power. You can play him later on and look for a heal or look for a tank up type situation. So I like his flexibility, and I like that they're staying so close to his original flavor. I think he's probably the closest to his original flavor of all of them.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, this seems like a logical upgrade considering the cost of having to build your deck around him.
Yeah. And it's still flirting with that line that we talked about earlier between, you know, Genin Baku and Kel'Seth, how, you know, Kel'Seth was too far one way that if you drew it late in the game, it was like, you're a stupid garbage card and I hate you. But if you get it on curve, it's like, I win the game. And then the Genin Baku was supposed to try to find the balance there of saying, okay, if you do this build around condition, you get something from the start. And Sir Finley's this nice in between that's like, okay, you can get me kind of any time and I'll do something super cool for you, but I'm not going to break the game like Kel'Seth. So I think it just depends if, again, you can find that paladin build around with no duplicates that's actually like going to work.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only thing that I would say kind of, I would put him lower in my excitement level is that ultimately the utility of being able to switch your hero power can be good, but it's up to chance, right? If you get him later, it can be a game-saving utility if it gives you something that remedies the problem that you currently find yourself in, right? But is that worth it when you don't know what you're getting? Is the ability to be agile more powerful than just building a really rad deck that works?
It does a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And that ultimately is like, it's kind of what makes Hearthstone fun, right? Like it makes it exciting. And if you can have a strong enough deck, then it can be really rad. Right. But I don't know. This is a wait and see for me.
Yeah, and the thing that made Sir Finley the original so great was that you could play him. He was neutral, so you could play him in any class that had a not so desirable hero power. So you could play him in Priest, you could play him in Shaman, and you could get rid of a hero power that maybe wasn't as strong given whatever deck you were trying to build, and replace it with something that was more along the lines of what you were trying to do. Since he's a paladin specific minion, it becomes less exciting than just a straight up neutral, right?
Yeah, because now you have to build a great paladin deck and not just build a great deck.
Yeah, exactly. So the other thing that we had revealed this week was Paladin's Quest, which is very exciting, though a little bit not really paladin-y. I thought I had the wrong class when I saw this, because it's a quest, so it's a 1-mana spell. It's a legendary, and it's called Making Mummies, and your quest is to play 5 reborn minions, and your reward is the Emperor's Wraps, which is a new hero power, costs 2 mana, that summons a 2/2 copy of a friendly minion. So you have to have a minion on board in order to enable your hero power, but then you can summon 2/2 copies of friendly minions. So this, to me, flavor-wise, I was like, this isn't a paladin thing. This has got to be priest, right? priest is the one that likes to, you know, summon copies of things and make mummies. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, you know, we spent a fair amount of time last week talking about the paladin cards being thus far a little underwhelming, and almost wondering whether or not there was something to the fact that everything had
one health,
right? If there was going to be some one health element. I mean, obviously that's not now, as we've seen the quest, right? There's no like play 5-1 health minions and then get something. But I guess this is kind of I mean, if you can put it on the board, you have a really cheap way to make different copies of them, you know? And if you look at like Brazen Zealot that we saw last week or something like that, that gives you +1 attack whenever you summon a minion.
Mm-hmm.
If you have, you know, now that's a 3-1, and then you have a 2-2 that then each other time that you play the fairly cheap minions, you can do something interesting with it. I mean, it is kind of a really cool upgrade on the paladin hero power that puts out a 1-1 thing that doesn't do nothing special, you know.
Well, that's the thing, right? Like the ability to constantly create minions, assuming you have something on board, which is kind of the other piece here. But I mean, you could even play an 8-mana minion and then use your hero power late game, right? So there is, since it's only 2 mana, there is a lot of kind of space to play around. You'll probably be able to put something on the board and use it in conjunction with your hero power by the time you've got your quest done. And as we saw with the Paladin Death Knight, putting a 2-2 down every turn is just a pain in the ass. So
it sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks to deal with.
Yeah. Just the idea of being able to like constantly create minions, that's a pain in the ass point of Paladin, playing against Paladin. But then now you're doubling their health and attack. Like, ugh. They're just big pain all the time. Damn it,
I mean,
Paladins.
Really, I guess then this quest, it like all quests, it's going to be how fast can you turn this on, right?
Exactly. And that's kind of the missing piece to this quest, and why I'm kind of dancing around whether I think it's good or not, is because you have to play reborn minions. So this is the new keyword in the expansion, is reborn. There's only so far 2 minions that we've seen revealed that have the keyword. One of them is neutral, and I think I've got a, hang on, here we go. Mermy is a 1/1. And it's a reborn minion. So essentially what this means is you get to play the minion. When it dies, it comes back again with 1 health. It's reborn. So all we've seen so far is Mermy, who's a neutral. And then we've also got the warrior minion. But obviously we're talking about building for
you
a paladin quest.
Assume that Mermy was something that was like laughed at heartily late one night. Right? Like,
yeah.
Mermy just seems like something that is the funniest word you've ever heard when you are like just maxed out at like 3 o'clock in the morning to work on various different names and mechanics.
Yeah, this name is not for us, you guys. This name
For them. Yeah. They're always gonna laugh at Mermy.
Yeah, exactly. So the idea of playing reborn minions, I mean, even playing 5 of them. I mean, I guess if you're looking at bouncing things or copying things, all of this stuff, like, I don't know. We'll have to, and even actually copying things. So if you're like facelessing or something, which facelessing a 1-1 would just, oh God, why? But that wouldn't count, right? Because you have to play them. So you'd have
you
to
have
bounce
to
it
play
back.
It, right?
Yeah. So it has to come out of your hand.
Hold on. So how is reborn different from resummon again?
It always comes back with 1 health. Specifically.
Gotcha.
So in this case, that doesn't really do anything, but in the case of the warrior minion, it's a 3-2. So when it dies, it comes back as a 3-1. And it is damaged, so it could technically be healed, but yeah.
I wonder if, so it always comes back. Oh.
Yeah.
Then I wonder, maybe is that, like, now that we see that that reborn is the quest and we have all these one cost minions, and that's,
well,
like,
we don't though. All we have is Mermy.
Not one cost, 1 health. All these other paladin things have 1 health. I almost wonder whether or not there's a way to like make them reborn, like a spell that.
Okay. Like gives them the keyword?
Yeah.
Hmm. That's interesting. Again, like paladin, I agree with what you guys said last week, seems kind of a little bit all over the place. Not a lot of great direction, because the other piece here, the other card that was announced, is called Tip the Scales. which is an 8-mana epic paladin spell that summons 7 murlocs from your deck. So yeah. You've kind of got like one health stuff going on. You've got no duplicates, changing your hero power Finley stuff. You've got murloc stuff. You've got reborn stuff. Like, they don't seem to have a lot of direction with paladin. The other classes, I feel like I know where we're going and what's going to be good. And paladin, I'm like, I think you might just be bad, bro.
Well, and also
this
it's like
might be so your expansion off
7 murlocs from your deck, right? But if you get Sir Finley, that sucks.
Yeah, I don't think you put Tip the Scales in your Sir Finley deck. I think you put Tip the Scales possibly in your Anyfin deck over in Wild. Or
drink,
the one
drink for every time you hear Wild in this.
Yeah,
episode.
Exactly. We're oh God, don't. We do not condone drinking on that scale because
we don't. Except for Garrett right now. Who's
Yeah, Garrett's fine. Yeah, you could be doing it. But yeah, like, but I'm wondering if there could be some sort of super cool, like really aggressive Murloc Paladin deck that plays Tip the Scales, trying to eventually get to a secondary win condition. Like, if they don't beat you with their murlocs in the first go, then maybe there's some sort of like Shirvala Holy Wrath finisher that you could add to this deck, because since you're going to be grabbing murlocs from your deck, 7 cards is a lot to pull out of your deck, right? So even if you don't get all 7, even if you get like, if there's 5 murlocs left or whatever, you're thinning your deck on a huge scale. So
yeah,
I wonder if there's something there. I want to see somebody try to build it anyways.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing. I mean, really, the biggest question I have is, I still 2 weeks in to these card reveals, I don't know why there are so many 1 health paladin minions.
There's got to be a payoff somewhere.
I mean, because why? Like, otherwise, like, you're just ruining it.
You're ruining Paladin, Blizzard. Stop it.
Well, no, not ruining. I mean, it would seem like it's leading somewhere. Whether or not it does, we shall see.
I think it will. I hope it will. Next up, we've got Rogue, and these are some of the most recently revealed cards. A lot of these came out yesterday and today. So first up, we've got a 5-mana 5/5 minion called Anka the Buried. And this is, first of all, super cool card art. Might actually be my favorite in the set so far. I love how this card looks, but it has a super interesting effect too. It has a battle cry that says, change all your death rattle minions in your hand into a 1/1 that costs 1. I was not expecting this effect. Like, this is one of those effects where you're just like, wait, it does what now?
Yeah. I mean, this is, it seems like a lot of these cards are built around mid-game gigantic tempo swings.
Yes. Yes.
Right? Because this is mid-game gigantic tempo swing. It came in like a wrecking ball, and it's called Anka the Buried.
And I've seen some people talk about how this could possibly work in a Mechathune Rogue, which just like boggles my mind. Not to mention over in Wild, Deathrattle Rogue's a thing. Everybody drink. Actually, drink.
Drink water. Drink water. Yes, drink. Everybody drink water.
Yeah, there you go. So, I mean, there's a lot of potential here, but I think you can also just build an Anka-specific deck where you're doing things like, you don't care what the original minion is. You just want the powerful Deathrattle effect. Something like a Mechanical Whelp. Like, that's a 2/2 to start with anyways, right? That spawns a big 7/7 or 8/8. I can't remember now off the top of my head. Or you've got like Deranged Doctors, which is just like, if you get a 1-mana copy of that out, you don't really care. Like, yeah, the 8/8 is great, but if you're paying 1 mana for an 8 heal to face, that's shoring up a huge weakness in Rogue, which is just healing. So for 1 mana, get an eight health heal to your hero. That seems pretty good to me.
That is good.
So, yeah, I think there's a lot of potential build around here for Anka, and I'm super stoked to see what people do with this. And I want to see what the golden version of this looks like, because I think it's going to be so cool.
Oh, you just want to see that skinny mummy dance around.
Yeah, it better be dancing, man.
better be moving, swinging its arms.
Yeah, better be swinging. And yeah, exactly.
You know, throwing its carrying arms in the air as if it doesn't care.
Exactly. Plus, you got the cool dreads and stuff. There's bandages. There's so much cool they could do with this gold card. But Rogue's also got a bizarre mugger. It is a 5-mana 3/5 rare rogue minion with rush and a battle cry that reads, add a random minion from another class to your hand. So this is kind of going down the route of burgling, which we've got another card that was revealed, 3-mana 2/2 weapon called Hooked Scimitar. I totally forgot to write this one out, but it has it's actually a combo card. It reads combo gain +2 attack. So I totally got this confused and didn't write it out and thought this was another burgly type thing. It's not. It's just a combo thing. So, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good card.
It's a good card, but so is Waggle Pick, right? <Yes. laughs> So why would you Hooked Scimitar when you could Waggle Pick?
Because Waggle Pick will be gone before Hooked Scimitar.
True enough. Hooked Scimitar also does go very well with the fourth rogue card that we got this week called Whirl Kick Master. And so this is like a mini Lyra for rogues. It reads, it's a 2-mana 1/2 that reads, whenever you play a combo card, add a random combo card to your hand. So it's low enough in cost that it can kind of enable combos itself and you can still play a couple of combo cards and while generating more. So I don't think you're going to see the crazy go off turns like you did with Lyra, sometimes multiple turns in a row, because it's a very low statted minion. It's very cheap, very low stat. Like, it's a 1/2. So it's going to die as soon as it's your opponent's turn, that thing's going to die.
Yeah. But I mean, it is a combo card.
It is absolutely a combo card. Yeah. So I think there's a lot of space again to build a combo deck, but I think that maybe we're gonna see this maybe alongside something like hopefully a Scargill. So Scargill makes all your Murlocs cost 1, and that's why you compare Scargill alongside the little 2/3 Murloc dude that gives you more Murlocs as you play Murlocs. I feel like you have to have some sort of card that would make your combo cards cheaper, because that's the big problem with Whirl Kick Master and Standard. The combo cards aren't cheap, so you're probably going to get 1 or 2 alongside this. You're not going to have a run much longer than that. Is that enough? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't play rogues, so I don't care.
I love it. Yeah, we're both kind of in the same boat. We're like,
whatever. You want to know what
things?
Rogue lovers, do your own homework.
Yeah, you guys write in and tell us if it's good.
Yeah, I don't care.
We only got one shaman card that was revealed this week. It's called Splitting Axe. It's a 4-mana 3/2 shaman weapon with the battle cry to summon copies of your totems. So at first I was like, 4-mana 3/2, that seems terrible. But the amount of things that are totems for shamans, including nightmare amalgams, which are neutral, but do count as totems. There's a whole bunch of good totems over in wild. You've got totem golem in wild that this would copy. Not to mention the evil totem that was just announced, which is part of the Saviors of Uldum. You could actually just be, like generating more lackeys, which we know how good lackeys are. So I think this is actually pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, 4-mana, 3 attack twice, like, that's not a terribly, statted thing. And again, it's like another mid-game power swing. Like, this can change the face of your game, and it's earlier than the 5 and 6 cost, versions of this card that we've seen later. So, yeah, I mean, look, it's going to shape how you play early, right? Going to be very totem focused, which can kind of suck, but if you can play it the right way.
Well, but that's the thing, right? Because it doesn't have to be basic totems. If it said summon copies of your basic totems, then this would be straight up garbage trash.
I mean, but in general, like, if every turn you're looking to put a totem down, right, because it's fairly early if you get it on curve, then you are, you might have one or two
I think, yeah, if you hit this on one amalgam or you hit this on even one evil totem, I think that that's enough. And I think that this card is going to end up being the kind of card that people hold on to too long and try to get too much value out of.
Yes.
When I yeah, just hitting 100%. It on one is probably enough because, yeah, you're going to end up with double amalgams. Seems good.
and yeah, and this is something where I think this is more of a, you know, aggro kind of card where you are taking control of the board and you are trying to do as much damage as possible before they can clear.
Yep, absolutely. You could even it would duplicate the Primal Fin Totem too, so you could just be making tons and tons and tons and tons of 1/1 Murlocs. Yep. It's the never-ending Murloc army. I love it.
Murloc train.
Yep. It's also a battle cry, right? So this obviously will help us with the shaman quest that's wanting us to play battle cries. So it's all coming together for shaman, much better than it's coming together for paladin. Next up, we've got warlock. So we had 3 card reveals from warlock this week. We have a 3-mana 3/3 evil recruiter. It's a common warlock minion with a battle cry that says destroy a friendly lackey to summon a 5/5 demon. So this seems insane to me. Like, this seems like just such a powerful zoo type card. Like, man, you have your the evil genius is the warlock card that gives you if you destroy a minion you get 2 lackeys. So there seems to be a lot of this, like, destroy your friendly stuff in order to do things that warlock / zoo type mechanics or zoo type archetypes are doing right now. This fits right in with that. You're going to be wanting to destroy stuff. You're going to want to, you know, get lackeys and do lackey things. This just seems like you don't even get rid of the 3/3. You get the 3/3
this is
and
a slam
the
5/5. If you have a lackey on, right? Or you can play a lackey on turn 4, right? If you can make a lackey by turn 3 and you have this on your hand, you are now playing a lackey which very often can give you other, like, really rad effects. Then you destroy a 1/1 so you can have a 5/5 demon and
a 3/3.
So imagine whatever, you play that lackey that gives you a 2-cost minion, you can get a rad 2-cost minion and 8 on the board by turn 3 or 4.
Well, and the thing about the lackeys that makes them so powerful isn't their body, right? It's not the fact that it's a 1/1. It's the
thing
effect.
They do.
It's the thing they do. Exactly. So they do their thing and you're like, huzzah. And then also you get to destroy them and do this this powerful summoning ritual. I love the flavor of it too. Destroy one of your minions, one of your lackeys, in order to do a powerful demon summoning.
You should have to take back what the lackey did.
Oh, interesting.
You have to take back that 2 damage, and if it killed a minion, then it brings it back. Like,
that would be I don't even know how you'd begin to track all of that, but it sounds like super cool flavor.
Hearthstone. Season, y'all got servers, Blizzard. Figure it out. Fine. I'm just the guy who yells.
But yeah, so Evil Recruiter, I think, is amazeballs. It's so good. We also got Expired Merchant, which is a 2-mana 2/1. Rare warlock minion that reads battle cry, discard your highest cost card and death rattle, add 2 copies of it to your hand, which again, I feel like this is awesome. Even in a zoo type archetype, like, you could do this in control. You could do this in zoo. You can do this anywhere. It has 1 health. It's like a defile activator over in wild. That also means you'd kill it right away, so you automatically get the 2 copies, so it can't be silenced. Like, there's so much play with this card. That is so, so cool. And then you don't even care most of the time because it's taking your highest card. The discard is totally within your control. And since it's the highest mana cost card, you probably don't want to play it right away anyways. It's the top end of your hand. Like,
it can take a little nap.
Yeah. It can go off into the nether for a little while and then come back twice as strong.
You
want to
know what? Go off into the countryside. Come back with a brother.
Yeah. I mean, you could have, like, double Mal'Ganis's, double Jirax's size. You could have double Gul'dan's.
Yeah.
This card seems gross. Like, this card might make me not want to actually go play Wild. All the excitement around Wild the rest of the show is thrown out the window because of the expired merchant. Just gross. You're gross.
All right, here, you're gonna have to handle Rift Cleaver at the beginning by yourself. I'll be right back.
Okay, absolutely. So yes, as Justin said, our next Warlock card is a 6-mana, 7/5 epic Warlock minion with the battle cry that says, destroy a minion, your hero takes damage equal to its health. So Rift Cleaver, first of all, 6-mana, 7/5, totally fine. It's a little bit weak in the body, but I think that's okay because its effect is so, so, so powerful. So if you think back to Knights of the Frozen Throne, we had Lich King that generated all those cards. One of those cards was Obliterate, which was a 2-mana spell that did exactly this. It was destroy a minion and your hero takes damage equal to its health. And it was one of the better options to come out of Lich King. And Lich King had a lot of very powerful cards. This seems so, so, so cool. Definitely going to see play in any sort of control archetype. Not to mention, it is a demon, which we should mention. This is the first of the Warlock cards for this week that actually has the demon text, and actually we didn't mention it with the evil recruiter who actually summons a 5/5 demon, but because it has the demon text, this is also something that over in Wild, you guys are going to get back from Gul'dan. So I don't see a Warlock control deck that doesn't run this card. This just seems so powerful. Not to mention in Wild, too, you also have all the healing. You have the Gul'dan healing power on his hero power, I guess the can't even remember what his name is. But anyways, the Death Knight Gul'dan healing power, power has heal to it. Plus you've got Dark Pact, plus there's just so much healing over in Wild. You've got Healbot, like tons and tons and tons of stuff. So Rift Cleaver, I think is great.
I mean, 7/5, like just such a, look at that bod.
Well, and like I said, like I was saying that it has the effect of Obliterate, which was a 2-mana spell. So if you say the effect of his battle cry is worth 2 mana, then you're basically getting a 4-mana 7/5.
Yeah. I mean, really the biggest thing with Rip Cleaver is, you know, exactly when you want to play it. And we'll see how everything shakes out on where it's going to be most effective. But the fact that it can launch as low as 6, like, good God. And you leave a 7/5?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, that nothing happens to that body, right?
No.
It just sits there being a 7/5 saying, what now? When you've also destroyed whatever was on their side of the board, right?
Yeah, because that's the thing. It could, it probably can be, just be played on curve, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, all right, just kill whatever, right? Yeah. Take 5 damage at max, right? Take 4 damage and just put a 7/5 on the board.
Well, and the other piece, especially over in Wild, that Chatroom is just pointing out is the fact that this also is going to enable your Hellstone, right? Because you have to take damage from your cards, which this will do to upgrade your Spellstone over in Wild, and then you have even more healing to get back whatever you lose by using Rift Cleaver. So again, really powerful stuff coming out of Warlock. I'm kind of sad because I feel like Warlock just always has the potential to be super, super powerful. And I don't know. I wish they'd taken more than one expansion off. I could have been good with another expansion.
The capacity to be the most annoying. Like, all these cards are really good, and I hope I'm doing an active job of suppressing my annoyance and the fact that I know I'm gonna have to see them and face them and deal with them, and they're so good, and I love that. I hate them.
Yeah, Warlock is just, they're poised to be very good again. So
Oh wait, a million ways that you can remove all of my best things. Oh wait, another way that you can heal to like 20. Oh, awesome, you're great.
Yeah, so we'll have to see. The only thing I will say about Warlock is it's kind of too bad. I guess the archetypes have changed a little bit in how they play, but we've basically had a zoo-type board-centric mechanic and a control-centric mechanic for Warlock, and that's kind of how it's played for a long time. So it's a little bit too bad that we're kind of going down those two routes again with these cards, but we'll see what the quest is like. Maybe the quest will be something totally off the rails, but actually playable this time.
Yeah.
That's my hope. So finally, we have our warrior cards, including The Armadillo, which is the legendary card. It's a 6-mana legendary warrior minion, 4 attack, 7 health, that reads, it has taunt itself, and at the end of your turn, give all taunt minions in your hand, +2/+2. This card is what came from the community reveal. So you guys beat 25 million bosses in the brawl, which I've got to say was super, super fun. I played a whole lot of it. And yeah, so we beat 25 million bosses. We got to see Armadillo. And if you guys haven't seen it yet, Garrett and I actually did an exclusive interview with the devs about Armadillo. There's a couple of other little kind of spoiler-ish things that they dropped in the interview. So go and check that out. The link is in the show notes over to our YouTube video. It was a whole lot of fun. And this card, I'm still on the fence about. I think this card goes, again, in your Quest Warrior deck over in Wild, because you don't necessarily have to build it as Odd Quest Warrior. There's plenty of viable builds that don't use the odd condition. So Armadillo, you can still make use of. The 4/7 stat line with Taunt is great for 6 mana. And I mean, if this hits one thing, then you're way ahead. So I think this is a pretty decent card, but it's going to depend on what else we get from Warrior.
Yeah. I mean, it's I think well placed at 6, you know, because anything like this, you know, could be a little OP if it were cheaper. 4/7, look, a 4/7 taunt's really annoying on 6. Like, so no matter what, it is not a terrible body, no matter what you can buff on it, but I don't know. I mean, this is so outside my comfort zone in terms of decks that I like to play, because all the decks I like to play need to be under, you know, 10 minutes per game. So I know, again, this is another one. I just look at this and I think of all the minutes of my life that'll be wasted as I chip away through all these overstatted taunts that are going to hit the board.
Yeah, because again, this is a persistent end of turn effect. So there's cards in the game that can double your end of turn effects. So you're buffing everything by +4/+4. Like, there's all kinds of crazy stuff you could potentially do, maybe even in standard. The only thing about standard is obviously we are in the era of mechs and Dr. Boom. And even though this looks like a mech, it is not a mech. It is covered in metal, but it is a beast on the inside. So
yeah.
You don't have to worry about this coming out of Dr. Boom. You don't have to worry about this getting slotted into any mech decks. This is taunt and beast. So it might see literally zero play. We'll see.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked to see it like that, because also that's not where Warrior is kind of going
right now. I'm kind of hoping that when we see the quest, it has something along the lines of, you know, taunt, because that would be a little bit, although none of the other quests that we've seen have really echoed what their quest did in the past, so maybe I'm totally off base, but I would like to see some more support for taunt in Warrior, and something that is powerful enough to pull people towards the Armadillo type cards, as opposed to just, you know, more bombs, more boom, more mechs. That's getting boring.
Well, it is getting boring, but you want to know what else is boring? Control metas. So
yeah,
I don't want to see that be a thing.
Yeah. I don't want to go back to the days of things like Odd Warrior. Oh, gross.
Game again.
But speaking of very, very powerful 3-mana 3/3s, Warrior got one as well. It is a 3-mana 3/3 epic warrior minion called Bloodsworn Mercenary with a battle cry that reads, choose a damaged friendly minion and summon a copy of it. It very much seems like all of the evil classes are going to get these powerful 3-mana 3/3s.
Yeah.
Because we haven't seen, we've seen Shaman and, like we talked about today, Warrior and Warlock have all gotten 3-mana 3/3s with powerful effects. And this kind of goes back to my point about, like, if the Explorers, which is the hero class thing, if they're not powerful, but the bad guys are getting these powerful 3-mana 3/3s, then again, if you're somebody who prefers to play Hunter or Paladin, you're in a feels bad man year. And, I don't know about that. Because these 3-mana 3/3s are so good. I hope the hero classes get them as well.
Yeah. These are pretty dope.
Yeah.
Like, you know, well statted, you know, that is an early game momentum changer.
Yeah. And the thing that makes this Bloodsworn Mercenary so great is that we've got now Rush and Reborn. We've already seen the Reborn card. He has Rush and Reborn all in one. When he comes back, he's going to have one health, so then you can, you know, play the Bloodsborne mercenary on top of him, get another rushing minion with three damage. Like, there's a lot going on here. Not to mention the new spell that warriors got called Improve Morale, which you can damage your, it's one mana, I think, and it damages your minion, gives you a lackey, and then you can also play that alongside the mercenary. So, like, whatever you want to copy, just damage it for one, get a lackey, and then copy it with the mercenary. Like, whew, man, this seems really super powerful, and, like, there's a lot of tools to do this that don't involve too much of a stretch within current warrior.
Yeah. I agree.
So yeah, 3 mana 3/3s for the bad guys. Oh man, super super powerful. Now, Jury, how much time have you got? Because I know we've hit our hour and a half mark. So
let's roll. I'm good. Let's power through.
All right, because I do have one more that I want to talk to you about, because I feel like this. I'm super stoked for this, just for the memes. And normally we haven't been really talking too much about neutral cards, but look at this thing. 5 mana 0/5. Neutral epic minion, the Desert Obelisk. The text on this card reads, if you control 3 of these at the end of your turn, deal 5 damage to a random enemy. Can hit minions, can hit face. If you've got 3 of them, each one of them will fire off. It is an end of the turn effect, which means that you can, as I mentioned earlier, there's minions and stuff that interact with end of turn effects, so you could possibly get these things to fire off twice.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know all the things that you could potentially do with this card, but I'm thinking, like, Res Priest, I'm thinking cubes, I'm thinking Facelesses and Khadgars, and oh my god, the Obelisk decks could be either ridiculously terrible to the point that they are just straight up memes, but what if somebody solves the problem of the obelisk and then we're seeing actual legit obelisk decks?
I mean, yeah, you're right. Like,
because we thought Shudderwalk was going to be terrible, right?
Yeah, it could be a meme, or it could be a don't let your dreams be memes,
right?
Situation where you are able to solve it. I mean, look, that is it. Look, if there is a way for people to cheat this out, because you got to put them all out on one turn, right? Like, that's the key, is that you are hoping and praying that you get one 15 damage end of turn effect, and that is what you are getting out of this.
And so that's kind of why I'm thinking something along the lines of, like, Res Priest. Like, what if you were running, like, I don't know, Xeric's Cloning Gallery with no other minions in your deck other than obelisks, so it always pulls out obelisks, and then you're resing them, and you, before you know it, you've got a whole board full of these things. Because you can't put 3 in your deck. So you're already talking about some sort of copy mechanic or res mechanic. Bounce mechanics won't work because they have to be on the board. You have to control them. So you're talking about copying or resurrecting. And that just screams priest to me. Even if somehow you could put 3 in your deck, they still cost 5. So you can't even play 3 of them on the same turn because of the mana cost.
I'm with our chat here, and I'm totally on board with them, that if somebody is able to crack this, aside from our giddiness right here in this moment, we're having the most fun that you could have with it, thinking about it. Because it's not interactive. If people can crack it, then this is going to be something that's going to have to get buffed. And I think it's already there to just be this glittering lore that people can screw around with and maybe have fun with. But other than that, look, you got to have 3 on the board at the same turn, right? They're 5 costs, so you can't play unless you're cheating them down.
Yep.
Even if you spawned another one, you can't play that, nor can you play 2 at full health, at full cost, and then do something to copy it.
Yep.
So
they have 0 attack, so they're not even going to be any kind of threat if for some reason, although, I mean, you see one of these come down, you're going to kill it, right? You don't ever let this live.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's not a threatening minion in and of itself, right? It's a 0/5.
If it is something that Yeah, because look, this is why it's a meme. Because if it's something that needs two turns to get cooking, then it will never live. And if it does, then you know your other than your opponent drew poorly or is bad at the game. And so that's no way to make a living in this game, right? Like, well, you know, and you can't rely on that.
Yeah, and like I mentioned as well, even if you do manage to, you know, crack whatever this combo code happens to be, then these missiles fire out 5 damage at a time at a random enemy. So that's kind of the final piece there, right? Is that not only, like, in order to, like, OTK your opponent, you're going to have to get almost a board full of these and also make sure that they have nothing on their board because it could hit a minion and then that's face damage you're missing, right? So I think this is, even if it's cracked, it's possibly balanced, but I don't know. This, I'm just so glad this card exists.
I just don't know. Yeah, I don't know what that recipe is going to be to get it out. Get 3 of them out on 1 turn.
Yeah.
That's the big key.
And it's because probably going to be super late in the game.
Even if you couldn't, like, make sure that it's not an OTK thing, like, even if it's just a board clear, it's a rad board clear.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely super flavorful. I don't know. I just want to see somebody try to pull this off.
Oh, someone will. Congratulations. Yeah. This card should be called Twitch content.
Yeah. Yeah, disguised toast fodder.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it just might as well have, actually, if you zoom in, we're reporting this exclusively. If you zoom into the center of the desert obelisk, you can see disguised toast logo.
Yeah. Oh my God, I love it. Well, that's it. That's all the cards that were revealed this week that we're going to talk about. So, yeah, thank you guys so much for sticking with us. That was awesome. We did have an email this week, but we are running long, so I'm not going to, yeah. We'll just, I don't know why we try to even prep emails in card reveal season. It's kind of crazy. It's silly.
Yeah.
I'm just not going to do it anymore. But if you do want to send in an email, you can do so by sending it to tacpodcast@gmail.com. Wanted to say another quick thank you to our patrons over at patreon.com/tack. You guys are the reason that we get to do this, and we really appreciate you. Like I said, you get access to the wonderful Tack Discord. We also wanted to send a thank you to our patron producers, Declan H., Sean C., and Cheesy Bob. You guys can check out the whole back catalog of Tack over on Amove TV, as well as on youtube.com/AmoveTV. And don't forget to follow the show over on Twitter at Tack Podcast. Justin, thank you so much again for filling in for our vacations. You're the vacation enabler. You're allowing us to take a week off. It's great. We really, really appreciate you being here. What do you want to plug? Go ahead.
Well, you know, I talk about stuff far less serious than Hearthstone, which is, of course, American politics. so you can check that out on my podcast, Politics, Politics, Politics. And then I do a comedy show with legend player Brian Brushwood, Night Attack. So go ahead and find that podcast, Night Attack. Or if you're watching us live here right now, then tonight, Tuesday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, we are live at twitch.tv/Night Attack.
Awesome. Thank you again for being here. If you'd like to follow Garrett, you can do so over on Twitter at GarrettArt. You can also check out nomoonart.com for all of his stream designs. And if you'd like to follow me, Jocelyn, I'm over on Twitter and Twitch at JossPlays. So if you're interested in Dead by Daylight, I know I've been talking about Dead by Daylight a lot, you guys, but it's so much fun. I'm actually going to be doing the Hearth by Daylight stream on Thursday nights again. So that's over with the Heroes Hearth guys. We're going to be trying to survive and probably failing horribly and hilariously. So that's over at twitch.tv/heroeshearth. Go and check it out. That's going to do it for us this week. Thank you guys so much for listening. And until next week, job's done.
Job's done. Job's done.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants. Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.